This is Pam Wiley, and we're here with Lane Zevenbergen, who has written a management book, Rip Off Your Necktie and Dance. Now, Lane, you have been the head of 3 multinational companies, and you've started about another 20 companies.
Yes.
And I have to say, I love the title of the book. And why do you say rip off your necktie and dance?
Yeah, well, it is, first of all, if you have a book and you want to create some attention, it is always better to have a crazy title. But the title actually also means something. It means, and now we have to do it different. And now we are up for something completely different. So rip off your necktie and dance means we have to stop running companies as we are doing it nowadays, and we have to do it in a totally different way. So okay. That's what the title means.
Okay, so let's take a look at the problem then. So what do you see as the problem with business the way it works now?
Yeah, well, the problem that I see, and it's nice, you are catching me now in Philadelphia, where I just spoke at a large conference. People were very enthusiastic about it, because the topic is that in the United States, at this moment in time, 70% of all the people who have a job don't like their jobs, and 24% of all the people that have a job get sick of it. And so we have a very demotivated workforce, and you can say, okay, who cares? But research has proven that if you have a workforce that is not motivated, that doesn't like the job, the quality of the product is not good, the atmosphere in the company is not good, and in the end, the profitability is not nearly where it could be. So it is costing us, the economy, a tremendous amount of money to not solve the problem, to make those people more enthusiastic and inspired.
Okay. Can you just attribute the 70% unhappiness to the fact that there was a great recession, and there was a lot of cost cutting, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, or what?
Well, it was there before as well.
Uh-huh.
So, in my opinion, it has to do not necessarily with the crisis. It could, by the way, help us to get out of it. But when people have more faith in what they are doing, when people can work more with more energy on what they really want to reach. But it was there before. A long time, and it has to do, in my opinion, with the fact that people, when they're trained to manage companies, are not trained about the most important factor in any company, and that is the human factor, and that is highly underestimated. Quite often you see that human resource people are not in the board of companies, so it is a factor that is extremely underestimated.
Now, I saw this too. I worked for an accounting company, and
yeah.
And there they talked about managers being basically project managers, and they
yeah.
didn't really talk about the managing people.
Yeah, and you see that very often. And when I started my first company, I was 22. I was trained to become an accountant. I even worked for a large multinational, Philips, for a very short period of time, but that was a very, very strange and boring experience to me. So when I started my first company, I thought, well, the only thing that I have to do is that I have to motivate the people around me. I have to. So actually, when you create the structure of the company, I'm the lowest. I'm the boss. Maybe I'm the CEO, but I'm the lowest person in the hierarchy. I have to make sure that all the other people in the company can do their work to their best effort. So they have to be motivated, they have to be in the right place. And that is, it is so normal to me in all the companies that I've founded. I founded 20 companies that it has become a way of life.
Oh, that is so nice to hear. So the older style of management that says, I, the manager, will tell you, the employee, what you are supposed to do, and you're to do it without question.
Exactly.
It
yeah.
assumes that management has all the answers and that the employees are just there to be worker bees. But
exactly.
but it's not yeah. particularly true that management has all the answers.
No. It is also, therefore, it's very, very interesting that you mentioned this. Very interesting that you mentioned this, because it is something that in many companies, and I would like to say in the majority of companies in the United States, that's the way that managers think they have to work. They think they have to give orders to their people. They think that management means that they have to control the projects, as you tell yourselves, and they forget that the most important thing is that they are there to not only stimulate, but stimulate and facilitate their people so that their people can do the best job possible. When you are running a company, when you're in charge, when you're the manager, you are not the most important person, I would say. You are almost the least important person. And that is not seen by many people.
Well, what
it's
is
a complete different, yeah.
What's amazing to me is that you saw this naturally. Now, I saw early on that, okay, managers weren't really trained to manage people. That was kind of outside their realm. And it wasn't until, I've been in information technology forever, and it wasn't until I was introduced to the concept of agile management in information technology, which basically says it's people working together to solve a problem, the manager's there to facilitate the work of others, the manager's there to say, what do you need to get the job done? And it assumes that people know what they're doing and that they can find the solutions to the problems and that they can ask management for assistance in getting the job done.
Yeah, it's called also servant management. Eh?
Yeah.
So you are, as a manager, you are, and there's nothing wrong with that. Eh? But if you think about yourself, about how important you are because you are running a company, then something is basically fundamentally wrong with you. And I have to tell you that my book, which has now sold 100,000 copies, which is an amazing, huge amount in France, Germany, UK, America, the Netherlands, seems to be new, unfortunately. Because you would say that everything that I write and I talk about is normal. People would not almost believe me if I would not have had this experience of running three multinationals, one of them 20,000 people in 60 countries, and created my own companies, that if I would not have done that, if I would not have had that resume, people, I think, would just not believe me. People would think it is it's bullshit, I'm telling stories. But I have been running all those companies with a goal to be profitable and to have a long-term focus, sustainable focus. Sustainability, in my opinion, means long-term. So a long-term focus and not a short-term hit-and-run activity.
And I find what you say absolutely refreshing. It all resonates with me because I've been there and I've seen that. And
yeah.
I've been in about 80 different organizations. And
that is a lot.
It is a lot, yeah. And it always starts from the top. And if you have somebody, as you said, a leader in love with their own image but blind to their organization, they're so insulated from reality they can't see what's going on, can they?
Yeah, you have to be able to see how relative, if you know what I mean, situations are. When I'm running a company and I die tomorrow, somebody else will run the company. So far for me being important to that company. And what I've introduced in my companies, all of my companies, is concept which we call rule number 6. And I've taken that from a program which was done, a training program by an orchestra director called Ed Zander in the UK, and he defined rule number 6 as don't take yourself so damn seriously. And I tell people that is a rule that they should adopt. And people ask me, what are the other rules? There are no other rules. There's only rule number 6. Also, that makes it a little bit funny. And fun and pleasure are necessary elements for people to relax in their jobs. That is also what is important, is that in the companies that I've always ran, I am talking to my people about which output does the company expect from them. What do I expect from an employee? What does the company expect from an employee? So that we are talking to our employees as persons who are doing or adding value to the company instead of people who have to be in the company for 40 hours a week. The attendance of being in a company 40 hours per week is nonsense. 70% of all the people working, it doesn't matter to when they are at their job physically. So, and still, we are talking about a 40-hour work week that starts at 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock and it ends at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And it's unbelievable that most companies are still being ran in that old-fashioned manner.
So by saying that don't take yourself so seriously, you're basically saying it's about the structure of the company. It's not about who's running it.
No, it is. It's the structure. It's the culture.
Exactly.
It is the mentality that a company has. Culture, therefore, is much more important than people realize. What are the values of a company? What is the vision of a company? Every company that I've always had, I've spoken to my people, and have, my companies have varied in size between, let's say, 2 people to 500 people. Those are my own companies that I have founded. And but I've always spoken to my people about what is our vision, why are we here, what are the values, and share those with the people, and let them do their work as much as they can themselves, because people like that. People like to be involved. People like to be appreciated. They work harder if they enjoy their job. So to me, Pam, it is unbelievable that I still run into many, many companies. I said 70% of all the people. I run into companies where it seems the case that the company actually is not so interested in why their employees are there. They, as long as they are there for 40 hours per week, as long as they do their job, which is most of the time not well described, companies are happy and they don't seem to care.
It's kind of the triumph of form over substance.
Exactly, and that is why you see that many company restructuring plans fail, because it is just an other way of organizing the same wrong culture, the culture that is failing. And I have to admit, it takes guts, it takes energy and guts to change that mentality. Yeah, because it's a lot of managers seem to be afraid of that, because they think, well, when I'm not in charge anymore, it's going to be a chaos here. And I've never seen that happen, by the way.
And that's it, is how do you break the insularity of the management system that says, I'm a manager, so I'm important, or I'm the executive, so I'm important, and break that insularity so that they will begin to realize that if they empower the employees and they begin to have the employees telling them what the problems are and then what the solutions are, because they know what the problems are. You find what the problems are, and then you go 180 degrees in the opposite direction and you can find the solutions.
Exactly. Then, but I think, Pam, that the crisis that some people think we are in will be solved better by company, and I'm convinced of that, by companies who involve their people. So, because what you have said, earlier, people have much more to offer to companies than what they quite often are allowed to offer. So, if, for example, we have a problem in the company and we involve all of our employees in solving that problem instead of only asking 1 or 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 managers to solve it, we have much more power to attack it. If we have a company that is in a problem because of the crisis, why don't we talk to all of our employees to see how we can solve it? I've seen situations in Europe where companies asked their employees to solve it, and those employees said, well, we love our jobs, we want to stay employed, we see that the company cannot afford it because of the crisis, so we voluntarily change our salaries, lower our salaries by 10 or 20%. Those things happen, but if you don't talk to the people, people are not even allowed to think about it, and you just start firing away. And like the cost cutting is always the problem to the solution. See, I'm also stimulating entrepreneurship in companies. And entrepreneurship is that, let me give you an example. If a company wants to make a profit, and the profit is not high enough, and you tell them the profit should go up, a manager starts to cut costs, and an entrepreneur starts to sell more. The entrepreneur looks to the outside for the solution of the problems, and a manager looks to the inside. And that is cost cutting always.
Well, but also if there's an incentive on the manager that he's getting paid, he or she is getting paid a portion of what the profit is, and the easiest and laziest way for them is to just fire people, then they get a boost in income. They haven't really helped the company.
No.
They certainly haven't helped the customers or the employees. They've just kind of perpetuated the problem, as you said.
Yeah, and then and you're right. And the most hilarious situation could then be that somebody gets a bonus because they have just fired 100 people or something like that. And that is totally against my mentality and my philosophy of how you have to behave as when you're an entrepreneur, because there is a certain behavior. I'm now running a public company. I'm the CEO of a public company, which is on the Amsterdam Stock Exchange. That is a daughter company of the New York Stock Exchange. And when we have discussions about the future, about next year, about budgets, it is always a fight between the financial guys who say, well, Lane, if we cut costs, then we have a more stable situation next year. And I'm always focusing on how can we grow, how can we raise our revenue, because I believe that a company which has a long-term vision, a longer-term philosophy, which doesn't fire and hire every two, three, four months, but has a more stable environment, that is what you see in family organizations. Eh? Family organizations who don't have the burden of the stock market have a much more stable, long-term, people-oriented approach. And that is healthier, in my opinion.
Because they're looking to grow the pie.
Yeah, they're looking to grow the pie, and they're not talking about shareholders alone. They're talking about stakeholders. That's employees, customers, also shareholders. Shareholders is one of the stakeholders. So it is a much larger group of people who are interested in the success of the company. And that means that if you define that as being sustainable, a longer-term sustainable company, then you give a bonus on that, then you have a more healthy system. But that system is something that will take us some time before we reach that.
Okay, so let's take one look. I love the reason you left accounting, and I love what you say about financial control being needed and desirable as long as it's not going to be a guiding force in management.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you said, you find this fight between managers and entrepreneurs, and yours is the sense of growing the pie instead of looking at just what can we do from the accounting standpoint.
Yes, the reason why I wrote Rip Off Your Necktie and Dance is because I want to tell people how they can use creativity, entrepreneurship, inspiration to create a company that is more long-term oriented, more people-oriented, and therefore financially more successful. And by the way, a lot of research has been done all over the world and has shown that companies who aim for stakeholders instead of shareholders alone have a much better result over the longer term. So it is so logical that it is almost unbelievable that it is not commonplace in any company. So that book, the reason why it is so tremendously successful in many countries is that it gives people advice on how they have to change their company. So every chapter has many examples of how you can change your company or your working environment around. So it helps people, apparently.
So appreciating your employees instead of seeing them as either the other, you know, them or the a liability, you get the people involved, you get the people in the company to come up with the solutions, it gets them involved, it gets them empowered, it makes them part of the solution, it gets their buy-in, which means they are committed to the solution, and they'll make sure it comes to fruition.
Exactly. It makes it easier, because if I don't have to explain to you or to your listeners how difficult it is sometimes for management to enforce their ideas or plans upon a company. But if people feel that something helps or something is logical, it's much easier for them to do. There's the example that I just earlier gave about voluntarily lowering salaries, which if management would think about it, would sometimes be almost impossible to do.
Right.
But if people propose it themselves, and all kinds of other solutions, how to deal with customers, it is not always so that management is the only group who has all the answers. People who are working see what the problems are. They're all most of the time closer to the problem than management in general. So why not ask them? Why not ask their help? And it motivates the people. Huh?
Exactly. Now, you have a whole chapter, The Great Adventure from Dreaming to Doing. That's all about entrepreneurship.
Yes, it is. You can say you dream, you dare, you think, and you do. And what I always stimulate in my companies is almost that people act before they think. And that is something that is very difficult for, because that's what you don't learn in business school. I have a master's degree in business economics myself, so I've been trained the total other way. I've been trained to write a business plan first and then go ahead, knowing that most successful entrepreneurs have never written a business plan. They have it in their head and they go forward. So I try to stimulate my people in all of my companies always to start acting before they think, because then they are moving. And when a car is moving, it is easier to move the steering wheel. Do you know what I mean? I use that as an example.
Exactly.
When the car moves slowly, it is easier to use the steering wheel. Certainly before there was power steering. But if the car is standing still and there is no power steering, it's almost impossible to turn your steering wheel. So if a company or a person is on the move, it is easier to change. If a company is on the move, it is easier to change it. So I'm trying to get people out of their position of standing still into moving forward. Do something. Be an entrepreneur. Don't be afraid. So in the environments where I work, in my companies, I always say it is better to ask forgiveness than permission, if you know what that means.
Exactly.
So move. Do it. Make mistakes. Not too often, of course. Make mistakes. Show what you can do, and don't be afraid. And that is stimulating a little bit of entrepreneurship in everybody.
I once said to somebody that I dreamed of doing such and such, and he said, "As long as you're dreaming about it, it'll never happen. Start doing it."
Exactly. Yeah. Do it. And that is do it. And while doing it, optimize it. Because otherwise. In America, somebody told me that in the United States, over 1 million people are writing a book. So, and I said, 1 million, over 1 million people are writing a book. And he said, but out of that 1 million, about 950,000 are thinking about it. And they call that writing a book. And the rest is slowly writing something, but only a very small portion of the people is really writing something.
Okay.
And that, and then you have to know that talking about books, the average sales number of any management book in the United States is 1,000 copies. So it's not, management books don't sell a lot normally.
No, they don't. No, and I will get to that in just a moment about this particular one. But one thing I want to ask you is, you make a point of saying make the customer the focal point. Don't forget the customers. Where's the market?
So, yeah, that is the reason why I say that is that many companies or organizations have what they call business development departments, or they do trainings with customers. And see, the solution to any problem in a company, the solution even to the crisis that the world is getting into, is lying outside and not inside. So also what is now happening in Europe, with saving the currency and discussions with banks and discussions about Greece, if you follow that, all those discussions are internally focused. And we are not addressing at all the problem in the marketplace. So we are not solving the underlying problem.
And the underlying problem has been a total lack of demand for people to want to hire more employees, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So now it comes down to exactly what you're doing is saying, appreciate the customer and go out and establish relationships with the customer. Find out what the customer needs.
Yeah. And that is, and everybody can be part of that. Every employee in a company can be part of it. If you're a receptionist, if you work in the administration, in the factory, every person can play a role, and you can think of a role that everybody, because you can say, well, I work in a factory, what do I have to do with the customer? Well, you make a product. The product is going to a customer. And if we personalize that product by putting the name of the employee in it who made it, I am proud to have made this car, Mark, and or Tricia, or whatever your name is, and you personalize it. The personalization has been lost over the past generation, I would say, with people who call help desks and never get persons on the line anymore who personally help them. So the individual treatment has been lost, and so there is a big gain to be made if you focus again on your customers again and not necessarily on the inside of the company. Go outside.
Well, I think your book, Rip Off Your Necktie and Dance, I think it's a stick of dynamite because it gets people up off their duffs and moving and saying, okay, where can I go and what can I do and not be stuck in the old way. And I like at the end you say, don't sink back. What do you mean by that?
Don't sink back into the old way
of doing things, right?
Yes, yeah. That is one, but I mean it in two ways. Don't think back is don't look back too much about what you have done, the mistakes that you made, but go forward. And the other way is the old way of doing things, in my opinion, is slowly but certainly dying. In the speech that I gave this morning in Philadelphia, people asked me that as well. I said, new generations, I have 5 children myself, new generations of people just do not accept the old way of management anymore. So the world is going to change. That will take a long time, maybe several generations. So we can also use the book and push forward more enthusiastically right now ourselves. But anyhow, you look at it, it's going to change.
Well, Lane, I checked out your profile on LinkedIn.com, and I see from that you have a particular goal, Management Book of the Year in U.S. and China. And I sure hope you get that. It's a great book.
It is starting right now, and it is picking up very, very promising. It has to do also by the fact that it looks nice. It is a pleasure to go through the pages and the colors, et cetera. So that also helps.
It's almost a coffee table book for management.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, but people go through and so I'm I have my hopes very high for
good.
The U.S.
Well, Lane Zevenbergen, author of Rip Off Your Necktie and Dance, thank you for being on KPCW's Mountain Money program.
Okay, you're welcome.
I hope everybody reads the book.
Okay, yeah, I hope so too. So you can buy it at bol.com.
Good.
Or Amazon.
Thank you so much for writing this book. It's just an excellent book, and it means I don't have to write one on management because you've already done it.
Yeah.
This is a great book. This is what I'll recommend to everybody because it's wonderful.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and thank you. Thanks so much, Lane. I wish you the best.
Okay, bye-bye.